Hey, Mark.
Hi, Dewey. Hi, how are you?
I am very, very happy to be speaking with you about this little masterpiece.
Oh, how nice. Thank you. Thank you.
Mark,
nice to speak with you.
This series is just phenomenal. Phenomenal.
Oh,
and
great.
One of the key elements of this is, of course, finding the pacing for this series between the drama of the aerial dogfights to the intimacy and the intimate fears that we see on the faces of these flyers. And the editing is superlative, I have to tell you.
Thank you. Yeah.
Just amazing. So I'm curious to start with, how do you even start approaching this? You are editing on all 9 episodes, and you're working with multiple directors who each have their own pockets of 2 and 3 episodes they're doing. Each of those pockets, such as episodes 105, 106 that Jack did, cinematographer, one is it's action heavy in the sky. The next one, we're on the ground, totally different pace. And what you have done, and this is what I'm curious about, is finding the individual pacing for that emotional tonal bandwidth, the visual tonal bandwidth within each episode, but still maintaining the overall continuity of the series as a whole.
Yeah, thanks. I mean, so much of it is we had to be open and comfortable with just leaving, just leaving the whole series kind of open and being willing to kind of go to any part of the series at any moment to help us kind of balance it out with everything else that had come in. So, you know, we really always looked at it as kind of a 9-hour piece and less of an episodic. It's more of a movie to us, right? And it was difficult to just balancing all the action. There was actually even more that had been shot, and just really kind of giving the ground sequences as much weight and as important as the aerials was a big task. And also just creating kind of a language in the first 4 eps for the aerial scenes that people can kind of follow and understand. We tend to take a little more time with all of that and explaining certain details and procedures. And then so that by the time you get to F5, you really have a language and you can just let the audience view it as it comes, and, you know, just let the horror and kind of the pacing kind of go more naturally.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, the main thing was, again, just that we had through the 2 years and I was putting it together, is just we had to be willing to kind of let things remain open, and, you know, the VFX would come in small chunks, and each little piece had formed something else and caused us to have to, you know, look for a piece of dialogue to help explain something. And so it was a very fluid kind of thing for all of us.
And so much. Oh, it does. And, you know, so much of this is it's very dialogue heavy. And this is where your first 4 episodes are so key, because you don't cut short or shortchange any of the characters. We get to hear, we get to see each of them and learn about them. So by the time we get to 105, when all hell breaks loose, we are so invested in each of these characters because we know them. And you've done an amazing job in the edit process to inform us and to make us feel for each of these guys as they're disappearing.
Yeah.
Just very well done, Mark.
Thank you. Yeah, I mean, it was a worry. I mean, like, on the Pacific, we actually went back, miniseries we did a while back, you know, preceding this one. We went back and shot a few scenes to kind of establish some of our characters before they shipped off and that kind of thing. And this one, we just kind of jumped in, as you know, and we felt like, you know, you meet them as they would have, some of them would have met each other, and some of them disappear, and you feel that loss. You don't know what happened to them, right? That's kind of the difference in this one, as opposed to working, you know, the Band of Brothers in the Pacific. It was infantry, so you kind of had a better idea of what happened to these folks, but these guys didn't know. And so you feel that way. And then, you know, just establishing Buck and Bucky and their relationship early on was something we focused on quite a bit. They kind of pull us through the first half, so just their banter and the fun, how they're fun together. And yeah, I think it all has worked out to have the proper weight, and really tried to just focus on five or six and the others. Otherwise, it's just too much. Yeah.
Because you could have very easily focused on, you could have spent more time with Bubbles, could have spent more time in episode 106 on with Crosby and Belle Powley's character that was introduced. Yep. And now there's mystery about that and who she is and how she plays. There's so many possibilities. So it just boggles my mind that you were able to distill this down into something that's cohesive.
Yeah, again, and modulating all of that was just what we did. We're working on every day, and along with, you know, even the historical aspects of it, you know, and that we don't want to lecture too much about, you know, how these B-17s worked or some kind of technical detail, and, you know, so balancing all that as well. But we also want to, you know, it was so interesting what they were dealing with and how the analog of all of it and how they actually got this done. It's just amazing. So balancing all that as well. It was part of it, you know, so,
Now, what was
the biggest, most fun puzzle I've ever worked in. So,
did you read the book?
I did a while back, You know, and then also, you know, I got to say, Orloff's scripts, you know, they were obviously such a great, more than a template, obviously, you know.
The adaptation is amazing.
Yeah.
Because I also had read the book.
You did.
All 600 plus pages of it.
Well, we had it in the cutting room with post-its, you know, just referring to stuff constantly and how somebody said a line, you know, and in real life and just, you know, how he posed all this stuff. So it was constantly something like a Bible that we referred to. So
it's a great Bible to work with, let me tell you.
Now,
working with multiple directors here, because looking at this as a 9 or 10 hour film, so to speak, and then moving the chess pieces around, you've also got multiple directors that you're working with. And of course, they each have their own style, their own tone that they want to bring to their specific episodes. What kind of challenges, if any, does that pose for you as an editor in trying to showcase the tone and the director's independent visions, but keeping it within the confines of the whole thing?
Yeah. You know, I got to say that really they, you know, I would say they made it easy, but they definitely, despite COVID and everything else, they were able to, they were very generous, I think, with each other and had really, you know, they had the common goal that we had, that this has to feel like one big piece that works fluidly together. And so I think they're very generous with us and each other. And you know, obviously they have their own styles and not to in any way, minimize that they brought to each episode. But they definitely were working with us and within themselves to bring something that comes together in the way it did. So it's really a testament to their generosity.
Now,
as far as working with them, you know, they delivered their episodes, and then, you know, they have to go, you know, this was a 3-year process just in cutting it together. So, you know, at a certain point they have to go on to other stuff, but they would visit us from time to time as things opened up more and more. You know, we'd send screeners to them and get notes. And so everyone was collaborating and involved in the process throughout, which is terrific, you know, positive, very positive.
Now, something you also do, you've also got some other editors joining you along the way. So you weren't totally in this alone, being rapier with anything. So how did the process work with the multiple editors that you did work with on the various episodes? Did you kind of oversee everything? or let them be a second set of eyes? What was that process like?
Yeah, I mean, again, with COVID, unfortunately, everybody was remote. You know, nobody really had much time at the set that I know of. I mean, I was in Los Angeles. There was people in UK and some in New York crews. And, you know, I came on 2/3 of the way through production, knowing that I kind of take over the episodes at some point, anticipating that I kind of be the one that would kind of lead all of it together. So episodes would get handed over at a certain point, and there were some overlap where we'd be able to work together a bit remotely. But at a certain point, again, it's two, three-year process. People would start to move on to other things, and we'd check in with them every once in a while. But and then Carmen Morrow, who co-edited 7/8 with me, she was with me through the whole process, and she's someone that was with me the whole time working with the VFX and otherwise and throughout all the episodes. So that was a dead. We worked on Greyhound together as well, actually. So that's how that went, yeah.
Speaking of the VFX, because this is so VFX heavy, how did that impact your editing process and the editing schedule? Because you obviously had to be waiting for stuff to come in. I don't know how much previs might have been available. It walked me through that process of working with VFX on this one.
Yeah, I mean, we all got very, very close. I mean, it was worked very closely together. And again, we all had to accept that it all had to be kind of fluid and open. All these sequences, we had to be open to any little changes and throughout all the way until the very end. And, you know, I don't want to keep bringing up COVID, but I think, again, with COVID, the VFX to some degree were delayed. So, and maybe for other reasons, but every little piece that came in, we'd have to get together and just figure out how we can make all these pieces, you know, work together and be clear, and what piece of dialogue can we steal here? Is this a music moment? Or, you know, how can we explain a certain detail with, again, being too pedantic? So everyone just had to be very open to the whole process. And then again, the historical aspect of it, you know, these guys went through this, it's real. Let's not go too far with any, you know, obey the laws of physics and that kind of thing. And they were so committed to that with us. So you always felt like you're on very, very stable ground. But we did have some previs, you know, and it's not always perfect for timing and that kind of thing. So as I said, and then we had some post-viz that would come in. But yeah, everyone just had to be very, very flexible and work very closely together.
You know, while you're waiting for to get it working with VFX, the traditional footage, the live action footage, how were you getting that in turn? Were you getting dailies? Did you get a huge lump of 6 hours of footage at one time? You know, so that you could apportion and break out your timing to get the work done.
Yeah, I mean, all that aerial stuff was shot kind of as traditional dailies, and there were cameras mounted all over the cockpits and other areas of the plane that they built out. And then we had, you know, something, you know, the volume screens, which, you know, the kind of, you know, you have a piece of video depicting what might ultimately be there, actually, for the actors to react to. So that was immensely helpful, because we'd have dailies that would come in with some actual visual video representation of what might ultimately be there, as far as, you know, like a fighter flying by, or, you know, a rocket flying in, or whatever else. So that really helped us a great deal, I think, with the timing of it all. And then, you know, again, Orloff, a lot of the details of these aerials were stamped out in his writing.
Mm-hmm.
So there is a great template there that, you know, that we were able to use.
Stepping away from the aerials, what kind of bulk delivery of on-the-ground footage were you getting? Were you getting things more in an episodic format, or was it the big glut of content, and then you had to break it down for the episodes?
Yeah, no, I think it's traditionally, you know, done with each episode. They shoot a scene and a group of scenes each day, and they would come over the next day or that night, and you'd assemble those, and then on, and you eventually have a whole episode to build. And then, you know, you eyes and the cockpits and all that, and then you had to maybe put in a descriptive kind of just text on the screen to say what the next shot might be that you don't have, right? Or you have someone hopefully build a little clip, a little animation for you to kind of depict it as you went along. So, each episode had its own footage that would come in daily. And then for me, when I came in 2/3 of the way through the production, I just started looking through all the dailies of all the episodes, just starting with one and moving on as stuff had come in. And then I would take have the episode and start see what we needed to do from there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Did the sound design, how did that impact your cutting as well? Because we've got score, we've got the soundscape is so layered, especially with the sounds in the planes, and then when we're on the ground and we hear the different planes up in the air, and then of course the dialogue, you don't want to lose any of your dialogue, especially when they're in the planes. So how did the sound design impact your work?
Yeah, I mean, again, we're very lucky. Gary Getzman was able to get Michael Minkler and our composer on very early in the process. So Michael, we had 5.1 mixes, pretty elaborate mixes of some of these episodes pretty early on to work against. So that just elevates everything. And, you have to use your imagination so much when you're missing so many of these pieces, but to see how, feel how much impact it's really going to have. But having that was great. And, and it's definitely something that was an ongoing, again, kind of cycle workflow between all the departments. How can we use a piece of dialogue to explain something here? How can we use an explosion to draw your ear, your eye to a certain part or to a different piece of action? So it was just such a incredible kind of evolving process with sound. So having that luxury of having him on and them on, that whole crew, great crew early on, was really beneficial. And then, with the music, we temped in all of Blake's stuff from Greyhound and the Pacific. His music editor cut a lot of that stuff for us and would send us stuff to help us along with the music. And then as he composed demos, we'd start, he built it out from there. We'd just start laying that stuff in with Angela. So, yeah.
What is the appeal of a project like this one for you, Mark? Because this is not the kind of project that, you see the depth of the book, the scripts, and the fact that this is a true story that we're telling in narrative form.
Yeah.
And everybody has to have some kind of, there's got to be an onus almost to do everything as a testament to honor these men.
That's it. 100%.
What is the appeal? So often you could just take a project, go in, get done, a TV episode for an hour, walk away. But 3 years of your life.
Yeah.
What is the appeal of something like Masters of the Air for you?
Yeah, I mean, it's all those things you said, just doing justice to their stories. And I am interested in this type of historical stuff. And I enjoy working and trying to, work on that line between telling a good story and being able to really tell people how this worked and what they... show people how all these things worked, and how they actually did this amazing stuff. And then for me personally, I think like so many of us, my kind of history or how I got to the state U.S. and what my grandparents went through, in World War II, Polish, I'm just drawn to this period of history and just know more about it and understand more about, how I got here. So, I mean, and to the States, and so I think if I had to choose, it'd be I just keep working on this type of thing.
I was gonna say, do you see yourself embarking on more projects like Masters of the Air? Obviously you do.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, both my grandfathers, they're Polish. They were, I guess you could say, refugees. Fought, one was stationed at one of these air bases in UK. And worked on, he was a mechanic, worked on the planes, and I think so many people have history like that in their family history that was affected by this period of history and this war. So and just really incredible people to tell stories about. So
I do have to commend you, the episodes with the bombing of Bremen, that real, because I had relatives and I heard stories growing up of my great aunts. They were living in Bremen when it was bombed. They were there through the whole war. My grandparents were here in the States, but growing up, when they would come to visit from Germany, I would hear stories about the bombing of Bremen. So for me, watching that and how that was executed and done moved me beyond belief, Mark. Just so well done. Because that's also just like the battles in Munster. These aren't things that people are familiar with. They don't know about. So I knew it was in the book, didn't know if it would be included in the film, in the show. So to see that from a personal standpoint, that made it even more impressive for me to get that bird's eye view.
That's so rewarding for me to hear too. It's just, that's great.
So, Mark, job just so well done. I am so in love with this series on every level, and I will sit down and binge the entire thing.
I will too someday. This is very therapeutic for me. I have to let go now. It's been a few years, so.
Do you have a palate cleanser upcoming? You know, some nice light comedy or something.
You know, I don't know if it's going to happen that way, but I'm definitely taking some time, you know, with the family and whatnot. But there's some things that are coming up, so it'll happen quickly enough.
Well,
it would be nice, but, you know, again, I just love telling these stories, so be a part of telling these stories. So
I'm glad that you are a part of telling these stories because you understand them and you do it really well. So
Thank you.
Oh, Mark, this has been so wonderful getting to speak with you this morning. I hope we get to chat again in the future.
And with you, thank you so much.
Thank you, Mark. Bye-bye.
All right.